Hello and welcome to another episode of the Saxo Market Call podcast. It is Tuesday and that means I'm joined by none other than Peter Garnery today as we're going to talk about equities. Hi Peter, how are you doing?
Hi son, great to be back. I'm doing great.
Always great to have you here, Peter. And this is especially interesting because we're going to talk earnings seasons again. I feel like it's just a few weeks ago since we concluded the last one, but I guess that's just live in the equity world.
True. There are always earnings releases coming, except for a very few weeks during the year.
And now we are kicking off one of the seasons once again. But I think before we start with the earnings season and look at what to expect from this one, I think we should just start having a look at the performance, recent performance in the past month. What's been going on in the financial market or in the equity markets more specifically?
Well, the three big stories. One, the revival and rebound of China. So the Hang Seng is up almost 3%. A lot of economic indicators are coming out of China showing that things are improving. But as we've talked about repeatedly, the rebound is because we're coming out of almost a doom and gloom scenario of China. There's a lot of structural issues. There's, you know, long term, there are demographics. Medium term, there are potential trade conflict with the U.S. Trump becomes president. We talked about that in our special edition on the on the election. And then Europe is the other story, up almost 3% as well. A lot of green shoots I've just published before we went into the studio. The investment case for European equities, where I basically highlight three macro reasons for why Europe is showing a comeback.
It's a very grandiose work, the investment case for Europe.
Yeah.
Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, you know, it has headlines have to grab attention, right?
Definitely.
And then we discuss a little bit what are the changes from last year and what is the composition of the European equity market. And then we actually give a little bit of a list of 10 stocks that are of high quality in Europe and probably not as well known by most. So Europe is doing great. And then the third story is actually one of the worst performing equity markets among the big ones, and that's the Japanese equity market, which is a little bit of a conundrum because the yen is actually almost the weakest on record. So you would imagine that Japanese equities are doing fine, but I think there's a lot of anticipation in Japan. The Bank of Japan will change its rate policy course, and probably more than what is currently priced in. So that's really an interesting development. And we, our quarterly outlook that was out recently, we did go negative on Japan. We did go negative on emerging markets tactically, which is potentially a bad idea if China can continue to muster some positive risk sentiment there. Although I doubt that. And then we went all in on, not all in, but we went positive on Europe versus the U.S. And
we're going to talk more about that on the,
yeah,
on
and
the next
just
episode.
Very high level. I think, the itching on my back tells me that I think it's going to be a good decision. But I've been wrong before and I can be wrong again.
And that's the beauty of the financial world. One is always right and another is wrong.
Yeah.
But okay, so that's the general overview. Pretty good in US, Europe, not as good in Japan. We've talked a lot about Japan this year. I guess we'll have to wait and see because it seems like it is just basically running its own course over there right now.
It totally is. And then, of course, there's a lot of focus on technology stocks. I mean, Tesla, I think I joked on Twitter, X, I think it's called, about it's not called the Magnificent Seven any longer, it's the six-pack because Tesla has fallen out of the bed. And I think I saw a graphic the other day. It was super fascinating that if you compare Toyota with Tesla over the past year, Toyota has almost doubled and Tesla is actually down over the past year, right? Super interesting. But Tesla is on the move recently because first Reuters were running on Friday an article about that Elon Musk have scrapped his plan to produce a $25,000 car, which was sort of the big grandiose plan from his side to compete with China, but that have proven, apparently, according to Reuters at least, to be difficult. And Elon Musk called them out, saying they were lying. And then he clearly had the intention to come out with a more positive narrative about Tesla. And then he announced on, I think, the 8th of August, he will reveal the robo-taxi,
yeah,
which have been this phantom thing looking behind the background carpet for what, 8 years or something like that, and it never came, and now supposedly it's around the corner. But I think classic Elon Musk, a lot of it is showmanship, and it's Tesla is very much, because it's so capital intensive, I think he's wise enough to understand this, that he needs constantly access to capital markets to fulfill his dream with Tesla. Mm. And that means that you constantly have to have a positive growth narrative. Yep. Regardless of whether you live up to it or not, according to the deadlines or the, what you signal to the market.
Yeah, and I guess that that is a good transition into the earnings season, because as we've said a number of times, especially during last, it is about managing expectations more so than it is about absolute numbers when we look at these things. And I guess that's sort of the same you're referring to for Tesla. But this is really the week where this earnings season is kicking off. What's the overall expectations on your behalf or maybe on the market's behalf for this earnings season?
Well, I think if we take the clue from the equity market, then, you know, trading at record equity prices, it would be very unusual for me to come in with a very strong contrarian view that this is going to be a bad earnings season. It's not. But so we expect a good earnings season. I think within that context, there are some details. One of the things that have happened over the past four quarters, so basically all of 2023, is that the cost cutting from especially US technology companies have lifted the S&P 500 profit margin to levels that are still very high historically. Whether they can maintain that trajectory, I think, is more questionable. I don't think really that's the case. And with the tight labor markets we're having both in Europe and the US, I think that one of the stories that could come back and haunt equities, maybe not in Q1, but further down the road this year, could be the pressure on the profit margins. A lot of the wage numbers are coming out significantly significantly above inflation, so that was a real wage growth going on. And then we've seen commodities coming back to life, and so I think that's one of the things to keep an eye on. And then Europe has been doing not as great as the US recently on earnings, so that's also one of the, I mean, if my European call is going to prove to be good, then we need European companies to report strong earnings. So that's some of the things I'll be watching as well. And then the final thing I would say is that I really have a focus on financials, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about that, Søren, because we have a lot of financials on Friday. But I think given the market's change around policy rates, going from 7 rate cuts to the latest I saw by December this year, 2.5, maybe we're getting closer even to 2. And you had Jamie Dimon, the JP Morgan CEO, in his shareholder letter yesterday talking about, well, maybe the market should begin to prepare for no rate cuts at all. And they have a scenario where interest rates go to 8% in their playbook. So, and you can see it, the financials, you know, banks, S&P 500 banks have done better than the index year to date, and European banks are doing great.
Yeah, exactly. And that is definitely what we should talk about now. And because as is tradition with earnings seasons, it is the US financial industry that's kicking off. We have in this week, we have JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, BlackRock, among others, reporting. And obviously, as you say, with this interest rate conundrum or whatever you want to call it, this that's going on right now, it is super interesting. How do you price the value of a bank when you don't know sort of the basis of what it can charge and earn? So what's your take on that? Like, what's the, you say generally positive, but how do we go about judging these banks?
I think I've said it on this podcast before. I think I've written some articles about this in the past. And my thinking on the banks all along, because we were pretty early on at Saxo to say, okay, we are going to have a structurally higher inflationary pressure and environment than what we have been used to before. We'll not go back to the old. We've been pretty consistent on that. The implications for banks, as we said, that was that the average maturity of debt out in the world is roughly 7 years. So it takes 7 years more or less for the entire global debt to roll from low interest rates to high interest rates. And we made some pretty rough calculations that, let's take a bank here in Denmark, like Danske Bank, which is one of the larger ones in Europe, a pretty high quality bank. Some would argue here in Denmark that, you know, it's not their communication and brand that is quality, but they deliver pretty solid results, I would say. And if you take that balance sheet and you look at the low interest rate and you just take the entire balance sheet without any growth and you just roll it onto the current interest rate environment, of course banks would double their bottom line with no problem. And then if you just add a little bit of real and then nominal growth because of the inflation, then suddenly you're looking into banking earnings that when we look back, let's say in 2028, 29, when we look back on this cycle that started in 2022, I think banks will turn out to have been a pretty nice business. I know there's a lot of regulatory and structural issues for banks, you know, payment companies, there's a lot of pressure on their asset management business, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not all rosy, but it's just that the rollover of all this debt to these high interest rate levels in itself will generate a lot of earnings for these banks. And you can see that in their return on equity. And I think we talked about, I think it was Nordea, which is a Nordic bank, right? You get 4% dividend yield and 4% buyback yield. So that's 8% capital return to shareholders. And then if you add a little bit of real growth in the Nordic region, which I think is pretty fair, you're suddenly looking into a stock that can deliver between 8 and 10% real return. And then if you add inflation, let's say 3%, then it's a stock with a double-digit return rate, potentially.
That's an interesting take, and now we talk about the Nordic banks, but in terms of these American banks, I guess the story is somewhat the same over there as it is here.
Yeah, and exactly, and what have also taken place in the U.S. financial sector is because of we've almost forgotten it, but this whole hiccup we had in March with the small regional banks that blew up, at least some of them. It's a little bit strange for us here in Europe because we don't have the same pressure on commercial real estate as they have in the US. I think the hybrid workspace has come back to a well-balanced situation in Europe in many markets where it doesn't kill all the office space. But in the US, it seems to be a much bigger problem. A lot of Americans are working from home to a bigger degree than what we're doing in many markets here in Europe. And in some office markets, it's just terrible, right? And you can see all the regional banks in the US with too much commercial real estate exposure. They just have horrible stock prices and, you know, a price for not necessarily disaster, but definitely potentially being just a zombie bank. And then the opposite story is look at Citigroup, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan, very big, well-diversified balance sheets. They're just cruising. Look at JP Morgan Chase. I mean, it almost looks like a technology stock. It just keeps going higher and higher and higher. And I must say, it's super impressive for a bank and a balance sheet of that size to deliver plus 15, plus 16 return on equity in percentages. It's pretty amazing.
All right. So I guess with that in mind, generally we are positive on the earnings that they're going to release later this week.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, the outlier here is BlackRock, of course, right?
I mean, of course. Which is something for something else than a bank.
Yeah, it's the world's largest asset manager. They have trillions and trillions of assets under management, and maybe a lot of the listeners here, they don't know BlackRock because they most likely use their products because they are the parent company behind iShares, which is the franchise name or the brand name of their big ETF business, which is really probably one of the best acquisitions done in corporate America over the past two decades, if I was to pinpoint a single one.
That's a big
because it was owned by Barclays, invented that came out of their San Francisco office out of California. It's a great story, by the way, for those that want to be nerdy about it. And because of the financial crisis, Barclays, to survive, they had to, you know, sell assets, and this was their golden egg. And BlackRock came in and scooped it up, I think, in early 2009. And it just was a wonderful business. And it was just as the ETF market just basically exploded from there, passive versus active investing, and the rest is just history. And it's just a phenomenal business.
And my next question, since you seem so intrigued about the financial industry, it may seem like I am not really that well knowing of this, because usually I feel like the earnings season financials are somewhat boring. It's the steady thing. So I actually wanted to ask you, when does the earnings season really start? Which sectors are we going to pay attention to? Maybe financials is the case or the answer, but I guess you also have other things you pay attention to.
Yeah, of course. I mean, technology stocks. There are three other sectors I want to highlight. So obviously the technology sector. And when we talk about technology, we talk about hardware, software, etc. And then there is the sort of the periphery of the technology sector, but lies in sector classification world, lies in the communication services sector, which is where you find Disney, Netflix, Meta, Alphabet, the parent company of Google, etc. So obviously the technology sector, and I think that's really where we are going to see the drama because of the very elevated equity valuations in the US. There's a lot of, even though the US technology companies will likely deliver strong earnings, the question is whether they are strong enough to support and the expectation. I think NVIDIA obviously comes to mind, a lot of the semiconductor companies. But I maybe it's too early to call it a top in NVIDIA, but and they still have a couple of quarters where with insane same growth rates and even higher expectations off that. But then so we'll look at that, and then the healthcare because of the obesity. We wrote about that in the quarterly outlook. A lot of focus on healthcare, and healthcare companies are just doing extremely well. And I think it's one of the building blocks that a lot of equity portfolios are putting in there to, you know, hedge a little bit against the weaker economic growth. And then the final sector, I think, which is really coming to life, which will not be part of the actual numbers, but will definitely be part of their expectations, are the oil and gas industry, the energy sector, because crude oil is really on the move in general, all the commodities as we talked about, which is potentially going to filter into material stocks, mining companies down the road. So not for Q1, but potentially in Q2 and Q3.
All right. Peter, I think we're obviously going to talk a lot about the earnings season in the next few weeks. So I think we will leave that at that. If we, besides the earnings season, what's are there any stocks you're paying significant attention to right now, or anything you would point people's direction at?
I think that if I was to talk about two stocks, if we look at our client flow, I think that's always an interesting way. We can just see that in Europe. The most popular stock outside stocks like Novo Nordisk and Shell, because of our footprint in the Netherlands and Denmark, is Rheinmetall. So Rheinmetall's stock price is up almost 500% since the invasion in Ukraine by Russia. And as I've said before, I think I've said it a lot of times, Rheinmetall is the company that I think will be pivotal in the EU Commission's ambition to create a juggernaut within the defense industry in Europe. There will be a lot of acquisitions, I think, and mergers going forward. I think that was also what the CEO of Leonardo, which is the Italian defense company, said on TV a couple of weeks back. We need more mergers and acquisition, and there will be more mergers and acquisition. I think the European defense industry is still really moving. And then the final stock I would mention based on our client flow is this Super Micro Computer, which is really gaining a lot of attention because they have an offering in within data center racks and how you stack these GPUs for this high performance computing. That's a company that is doing very well, and I think not so fine to the distance for in the future from now. We'll be writing a little bit of primer on this company. And is it completely wacko what is going on in the market with Super Micro Computer, or is it actually warranted? And we'll give a little bit of a background on that story.
All right, Peter. I think that was everything I had for today. Thank you so much for coming and making us all a little bit smarter, as always.
Thank you very much.
And to all of you out there, on behalf of Peter Garnery, the Saxo Market Call podcast, everybody here at Saxo, my name is Soren Otto. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back anytime soon. But until then, happy trading.